This is David Sosalski, Southern Oral History Program, University of North Carolina. This is part two in my interview with Sarah and Harry Kittner. We're in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and it's January 26, 1999. Well, one of the things that stood out to me, we were kind of saying this yesterday when, as I was leaving, was how connected y'all were, both kind of socially and, you know, kind of in a religious sense, with a community outside, you know, larger than Weldon, mm-hmm. that it made you not feel isolated when you moved from Richmond, the city girl, to little old Weldon. But it also meant that you were connected, you know, unlike, you know, I think like the regular Joe in eastern North Carolina, you had a world, you know, a world beyond Weldon. Could you talk a little bit about that, the friends you had, and the way, the things y'all did with people that were beyond Weldon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We used to go to visit our friends in Richmond when they were having a dance or something like, when we were first married, we'd go, we'd go for a weekend. Usually we went on maybe late Saturday afternoon if it was special, or we'd go for the day on Sunday.
Train, or you drive up?
No, we'd drive. Yeah, by this time we had cars.
Sure.
Yeah, a number of times we went to Norfolk on New Year's Eve to be with friends.
And these would have been friends you met?
No, these were friends that, old friends.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or maybe cousins.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Of mine.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that having that larger world made you, or you too, Harry, I mean, more in tune with the, you know, kind of life outside of small town?
Well, I knew what life outside of the small town was like, mm-hmm. certainly. And, of course, Harry was in the clothing business, and we used to go to New York several times a year on buying trips.
Right.
So that enlarged our world, so to speak.
You'd stay with family up there?
No. We'd have to stay in a hotel.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember, were there issues that came up, either statewide issues or national issues that you remember having a special impact on you during these years? Mm-hmm. When you look back.
You know, we were involved with outside activities that had connections outside of the community. I became a director of the North Carolina Retail Merchants Association. Uh-huh. We met all throughout the state 3-4 times a year. Sarah would go to the meetings with me.
Uh-huh.
And we became acquainted with a lot of business people throughout the state. Even though we came from a small town and had a small business, some of them were like with Lowe's or Belk's or Food Line, some of the Eckerd's, and we became friends with these people who were, you know, much larger business people than we were. And that gave, I was involved with the school board, and we had meetings and
Did you serve on the school board for a time?
Yeah, I served on the school board for 16 years,
wow.
and most of the time I was vice chairman.
Would that have been City of Weldon?
City of Weldon, yeah. And then, we were involved with the North Carolina Symphony locally, and uh-huh. we were involved with the Red Cross and the Cancer Society, and I became involved with the hospital, and Sarah became involved with the community college, which we'll tell you about a little later. And so, you know, our horizon sort of broadened.
And like the hospital and the community college, that would have been up in Roanoke Rapids?
Well, actually, the hospital is in Roanoke Rapids, and I was on the first, the original board of trustees that built the hospital, and the community college was in Weldon, located in Weldon. And it's still
really?
There.
The main just the branch.
Oh, no, the main campus is there, and served on the board for 15. About 15 years, wow. And chairman for 2 years, vice chairman for 2 years.
When was that organized? When did you start?
When what?
When was the community college organized? What, do you remember?
Well, it's about 25 years old, isn't it? Uh-huh.
Well, it's a little over 25, and you served for the last 15 mm-hmm. years.
Wow.
Up mm-hmm. until last July.
Mm-hmm.
And I was involved in getting it located in Weldon through the Weldon Business Bureau. I was president then. And
I was going to say, that shows what power in the county was at that moment.
And so, you know, we had, both of us had relatives outside of Weldon mm-hmm. that we were in close contact with, not only in Richmond and Norfolk, but my brothers in Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia. Cousins up in upstate New York, and Sarah had cousins, you know, scattered about in Florida and up in New York and whatnot that we kept in touch with.
Yeah.
So, you know, we had sort of a broad horizon, I guess you mm-hmm. would say.
Well, clearly you had a broader horizon in a business sense and kind of a
civic sense,
sense. And through your family. What about, like, through the synagogue in the... Did you feel part of a larger Jewish community mm-hmm. as well?
We belonged to a Jewish organization called B'nai B'rith mm-hmm. that our local chapter was in Rocky Mount, and members were in Wilson, Tarboro, Rocky Mount, Weldon, Enfield, different places throughout northeastern North Carolina that we became, you know, involved with. I served as president a couple of years, and we made friends. New friends in those towns. Our children, as they grew up, they became involved with the Jewish youth organization that extended from Weldon to Kinston, Goldsboro,
really?
Greenville.
It was just for like that part of North Carolina?
Yeah, the northeastern part. And
what,
course,
what was it called?
But that was...
It was B'nai B'rith Youth Organization. And then they had connections with people in Raleigh and Greensboro and whatnot, that we sort of became acquainted with some of the parents and whatnot.
Yeah, so, it's so statewide and nationally.
And international.
Well, actually, this is a time where I just have to like show my ignorance, or I'm yep. not going to learn anything here.
That's
because I've been around people who have belonged to B'nai B'rith all my life, and I don't really know what it is.
It's a service organization. In fact, it's the oldest service organization in the United States. Older than Rotary, older than Lions.
And what kind of activities?
Well, it's really the anti-defamation. A lot of it is anti-defamation.
Which would mean kind of human rights in general.
Yeah.
Human rights.
Because mm-hmm. I've seen it not just against like anti-Semitic things, right?
No, yes. No, in general, I think.
And it was involved in the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
Well, not so. Necessarily the what we think of as a big civil rights organization. But
individual cases.
Well, all throughout the world, we as B'nai B'rith, we supported what was going on in Israel in a humanitarian way, not uh-huh. military way. Uh-huh. I remember we raised money to buy a Jeep soon after the formation of Israel and sent uh-huh. it to Israel. Uh-huh. We supported hospitals.
Uh-huh.
We could. Supported the underprivileged, uh-huh. and it wasn't just limited to Jewish
right.
people, but to
right.
all kinds of worthy causes.
Uh-huh.
And
you said it wasn't based in Weldon; it was based in
Rocky Mount was sort of the headquarters.
Kind of mm-hmm. the eastern North Carolina.
Because they were just
part.
You know, Jewish people were scattered. We were a scattered nation.
Mm-hmm.
In eastern North Carolina, we weren't right. all in one hub like in Richmond or Norfolk. But
right.
So we had a lot of outside contact.
Mm-hmm. And did B'nai B'rith have was it men and women?
No.
Originally, there was a men's, it was a men's organization, and then in some places they had a women's auxiliary. Mm-hmm. But we didn't have the women's auxiliary, and we just included women.
Uh-huh.
As part of our organization.
But they didn't hold office.
Right.
We were
along for the ride, so to speak. We'd go to the socials and that sort of thing, but I don't think we participated in meetings.
No, most of our meetings were social anyway.
But in recent years, women are part of the organization, just like all the other organizations.
Right. Well, is there a separate like Jewish group that women belong to that you were part of?
Well, they have a Hadassah, which is throughout the world. It's a woman's Jewish service organization.
Is that the full name, or is it Hadassah?
Hadassah.
Is it, and it's a service organization. And did it have any real life in North Carolina, or?
Well, we never had a chapter in Weldon, but I used to belong to the Raleigh chapter for many years, and now I've had my membership switched to Chapel Hill. It's most of their work is done, and it's to support the Hadassah Hospital in Israel and other philanthropic things, mostly in Israel.
But in these earlier days that we were talking about, the Hadassah probably didn't connect you to a larger world the way that B'nai B'rith did.
No, did not.
Were there other groups that
The North Carolina Association of Jewish Men and Women.
And that threw us in contact with Jewish people throughout the state.
Now, was it very active?
Been a very active organization.
It goes back to the time that y'all were married?
Even before that. I mean, as a child, I remember a district meeting being held in Weldon of the North Carolina Association of Jewish Women. And it was at the Farber's home, and people came from Goldsboro and Kinston and Rocky Mountain and Wilson. I remember the men sat on the front porch while the women met inside the house. but it was a very
active organization.
And in a way, it still is. It helped form the Blumenthal Jewish Home for the Aged, and they have a... The two organizations have merged, the North Carolina Association of Jewish Women and North Carolina Organization of Jewish Men. They've merged now, and they do a lot of philanthropic work throughout the state. They support a educational program for Sunday school teachers throughout the state, so that the teachers are trained to go back into the small communities and teach the children.
And in the days when it would have come, the years when it came to like Weldon long ago, what kind of issues or what was its program then? Was it a service organization or more of a?
It was a service organization, but the primary purpose, I think, was to bring the Jewish people who were scattered in small towns and even in Raleigh and Greensboro and Charlotte, larger town, to bring those people together so they would get to know one another and feel a camaraderie. And that way I got to know, growing up, you know, Jewish families throughout the state. And even now we meet up with people that you know, our original contacts were many, many years ago.
And that seems, I mean, to be a, you know, like a central thing in this kind of reaching out beyond it's a question that maybe I think I know the answer to, but why do you think that it was so important, you know, to y'all?
You mean to us individually or to the Jewish people?
Part of being Jewish.
I meant individually, but actually both, I guess.
I think there's a trend. I don't know if trend is the right word, that Jewish people want to be connected.
Well, they are connected, whether they want to be or not.
In the religion, you know, to have a service, you're supposed to have 10 men, a minion. Now, some of us, we count the women, too. And in a small town like Weldon, we never did go by that. We just had a service, whether we had 8 or 10 or 20.
Really?
We didn't hold off because we didn't have 10.
going back to B'nai B'rith, they sponsored Hillel, which is, we have a Hillel house here at Chapel Hill. Right. There's one at Duke. B'nai B'rith is the one that sponsors that.
I didn't know that. Mm-hmm.
And they have these Hillel organizations throughout the country on college campuses, and it's for Jewish college students. It's a gathering place for Jewish college students.
The same as most other. There's probably a Baptist student union, and there's a Catholic group, and you know, and I think the Methodists have one, you know, and all. So that it's just.
That's been a big part of the sponsorship of B'nai B'rith.
Supporting these organizations. Mm-hmm.
Of course, the Baptists don't have to go to, didn't have to go to such lengths to find one another.
No, but you know, even though they have Baptist churches here, there's still, I think, a Baptist student union.
Right. No, I meant like back in Weldon.
No, they were all. And,
it wasn't hard to find another Baptist.
And you know, I noticed growing up in Weldon that most of the people, their closest friends were from the church that they belonged to.
Yes.
Otherwise, the Baptists, you know, I can name them, and their close friends were all Baptists. And the Methodists, their closest friends were Methodists.
And the Episcopal.
Episcopalian especially.
Mm-hmm.
But but in a small town, there was some intermixing. I mean, you know, it wasn't, and everybody stood away from each other.
The school helped shake things up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, that's, I don't know where we left off that we need to start to pick back up.
Well, I was going to ask, in all this kind of world of this kind of larger community, you know, that you said you kind of reached, well, with the synagogue, reached to Emporia and to Rocky Mount and with the different organizations, are there people from those days that stand out to you that as being especially, I don't know, meaningful or noteworthy in your eyes, people who influenced you, or people that just stand out as kind of impressive figures of the day? I don't necessarily mean like big political mucky mucks either. I just
we still have several very close friends that we met, you know.
Most of our old friends from years back are from that group, from those.
Mm-hmm. Some of them now live in Florida, some of them live in Virginia Beach, Richmond, Norfolk, and we still keep in touch with them.
Venture to say they are among our closest friends. Mm-hmm. Now.
But say that even like the older generation, like you would have been fairly young in, like when you were married,
mm-hmm.
were there people at that time who were especially commanding figures in this broader community that stretched mm-hmm. from Goldsboro to
Well, I mean, I think I.D. Blumenthal stands out, and he's not necessarily from Eastern North Carolina, but he was from Charlotte.
Right.
But he underwrote the circuit riding rabbi project, and he came to Weldon many times, and he was a very impressive figure.
He was.
A man.
He was a great philanthropist.
Yeah.
My tongue is twisted. And the Blumenthal Jewish Home, he helped found that, and it's named after him. And his family founded the Blumenthal Performing Arts Center in Charlotte.
But it was
a statewide, you know.
Yeah.
They also provide the place to have the B'nai B'rith Institute of Judaism, which is up at Wild Acres, which is owned by the Blumenthal family.
Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in fact, there was a Mr. Blumenthal there when I.
Yeah, his brother. Herman Blumenthal.
And B'nai B'rith has institutes there in the summer.
But in all these towns, there were Jewish men and women who were, you know, leaders in their community.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't that they were just a leader in the Jewish activity, but they were leaders in their community. And I guess a lot of us younger ones at that time sort of followed in their footsteps and, you know, took active parts in our community.
Was there anyone in Weldon who you especially respected?
Yes. Ellis Farber.
He said his family was really the first Jewish family.
Yeah, his father was probably one of the first mm-hmm. ones who remained there. There were probably others who came sure. before, earlier, but didn't remain there. But Ellis just recently passed away at the age of 92.
Wow.
And he drove to Scotland Neck, where he had a little shop. He downsized his big business to just a small shop almost every day. And he was a leader in our congregation, and every Friday night he would give a lesson from the Bible.
Wow. At the home?
No.
Well, I'm talking about in the synagogue, mm-hmm. you know, up until 2 weeks before he died.
Wow.
And he died last December at the age of 92. And he was just a good person.
He was well respected within the community, and at his funeral, the temple was just full of people from Scotland Neck. That's where he mm-hmm. had his shop, and
Now he had grown up in Weldon.
Yeah, and he had kept a home in Weldon.
But his business was there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the Baptist preacher in Weldon gave the eulogy.
That's great.
That was very good. Gave a fine eulogy.
What kind of shop did he have? He
had a clothing store. Uh-huh.
Aside from his like success, in business, I can see a special admiration here for him. What? What was he like that made him special?
He was just a great person. He was a very generous.
A bachelor. He was a bachelor, and he always had a joke. Uh-huh.
He was very active in many community endeavors. In fact, the town of Scotland Neck honored him about 3 years ago as the marshal, chief marshal of the uh-huh. the Crape Myrtle
uh-huh.
Festival.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And... So I mean, he was probably
he would go down to the Idle Hour, which is
I've been to the Idle Hour. They shut it down though, didn't they?
Yeah.
And he would go there and meet his cronies, and most of the day was spent going back and forth to the Idle Hour. Whenever you would stop by at the store, he's down at the Idle Hour.
but he was just a very friendly, just a good person. And I think he did a lot of good.
He did.
And a lot of people didn't know what he did. I mean, he did it quietly.
He was very low-key.
Mm-hmm. A lot of it I knew, but most people didn't know. And he probably did a lot that I didn't know about either. And
very kind.
But like I said, in each community there was there were some outstanding
sure.
people who...
Are there women that stand out particularly as...
Fanny Marks. Well, because she was most a businesswoman, but she stands out as a personality
uh-huh.
because she's well known throughout North Carolina and Virginia.
Now, is she from Weldon?
She's from Roanoke Rapids. She lived in Roanoke Rapids, and she opened a dress shop catering more to affluent people,
uh-huh.
and they came from miles and miles because they wanted Fanny Marks to wait on her. She's still living. She's confined to a wheelchair, and she's at Virginia Beach at her condo. She's 94 years old.
Wow.
Or was she 95 this January?
I don't know, but she grew up in Roanoke Rapids,
and
she was...
She just had friends from the governor's... And
she dressed many governor's wives.
And all the debutantes, and the debutantes' mothers, and the mothers of the brides, and... Mm-hmm. And she was just the fashion
maven.
Maven, not dictator. I don't want to say this. Dictator.
That too.
I know what you mean.
And she had a very unique business.
And a new, unique personality.
In the later years, she took in her sister and brother-in-law, Bob Liberman, and they moved down. Well, they moved to Roanoke Rapids about the time we got married, shortly thereafter. And they became very involved in Roanoke Rapids community. And Bob was sort of one of the main leaders of that synagogue. Mm-hmm. he did a lot of the footwork, mm-hmm. whereas Alice Farber was sort of the...
Well, he conducts a great funeral, too.
Yeah, he conducted funerals, bar mitzvahs. He's not an ordained rabbi, but he speaks well, and he taught himself. And
Would Goldsboro's Jewish community have been on a different side of
things? Yeah, it was sort of on the fringe.
I was going to say, what was the woman there who played such an important role?
Ms. Wheel.
Yes.
Gertrude Wheel.
And the getting the right for women to vote and things like that.
Yeah, Ms. Gertrude Wheel. And she was very active in this North Carolina Association of Jewish Women.
Now, she was a generation older than y'all?
Oh, yeah. She was older than my parents.
Okay.
She was probably, older than my parents, but I remember she came to Weldon for that meeting I spoke to you about. And,
she was always
held in awe.
What do you mean? Because
she was very respected. I mean, for what she did, and she just had a good name and a good reputation throughout the state. We knew some of her, I guess, great nephews. I guess they were. You know, over the years we became acquainted with
Harry didn't. When she was responsible, or was it the North Carolina Association of Jewish Men or Women who had this fund that they would help students who want to go to college? And, days before you could get all these loans.
It was named the Sophie Einstein Loan Fund, a scholarship fund, and it was handled and mainly by a fellow named Cy Jacobs in Greensboro. But many organizations just contributed funds to that, and students who felt the need of financial aid back in the 30s and 40s were able to get loans to go off to college. And I don't know if it was just limited to Jewish students or not. Mm-hmm. It might have been, but I don't. But like Sarah said, that was before the time when there was a lot of scholarships available and banks made loans. And
was Sophie Einstein originally from Rocky Mount?
You know, I don't know. No, there were the Epsteins in Rocky.
Oh, Epstein. And Rocky
Einstein. So I don't know. You know, I never knew exactly who she was, but she was. Maybe she was the one who started it. But I know Gertrude Wheel probably helped sponsor it. And, to get it off the ground.
Yeah. Well, you said that now they're having, or that for a time that Weldon did have Friday night services.
Oh, they still do.
Every Friday night.
They still do, even though there's three or four people there, they go, unless they know there's only going to be two people there.
That's
now, because you're right.
Of three.
You know, when we lived there, and I'm going back, 10, 15 years ago, we'd have 10, 15 people at services. Some of them would come from Emporia. We had people in Ronald Crappers who are no longer there. We have a few who sometimes would come from Enfield or Warrington.
Had it always been that way? I mean, like when y'all got married, were there already a service every week?
Oh, yeah. I had them when I was growing up.
Yeah, we used to have 30-some people for Friday night services at that time.
When there were children, and my children were not only teenagers, but even younger. But they had services every Friday night when I was growing up as a boy.
Well, how would it go? I mean, if you have these people driving all these distances, do they eat before they come and then?
Now, during those years, where did they come? Did they come from Emporia
from Warrington, which wasn't far.
They're coming from outside town.
Yeah, they just come for 2 hours and then they go back home.
I believe most of the people from Enfield went to Rocky Mount at that time.
In the early years, they did. Then
when we were married.
Yeah, and then later years, some of them start coming to Weldon. But,
so they eat at home? And then
They would eat at home. Because, it's no difference than driving from here to Durham, or here to Raleigh, or something like that. It probably didn't take any longer.
And it would be a 7 o'clock service?
Yeah, 7 or 8 o'clock, more than
that. Well, years ago, it used to be 8 o'clock.
And most of the time we'd have like a little social hour afterwards with refreshments and coffee so that people sort of congregate and chatted. And
now, is the I'm trying to get a visual image of everything. Is when coming up, both of you really, that if you had to like look at like your the food that's going to be served at a, what's the Jewish equivalent of homecoming? Is there a Jewish equivalent of homecoming?
Well, we have a
like the Baptist, instead of Baptist, yeah, I was
here. We have get-togethers. I don't know if you call it, but our homecoming was mostly during the holiday time.
And so during the holiday times, different families would meet and, you know, would come home and a person in the family would have everybody over and they would be responsible for preparing the dinner.
And is the dinner for the high holidays in Weldon going to be the same kind of food that Jewish family would have? The high holidays.
Pretty much, and I think.
When it was in the home.
Yeah.
When it was in the homes, it was. But in recent years, like on the first day of the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, after services, we would all congregate at the Holiday Inn. We'd have a private room, and we'd have a, you know, almost like a community meal.
Right.
But, you know, it would be catered and would be at the Holiday Inn.
Yeah, so it wouldn't be the same thing you would have.
It wouldn't be
the
home cooking.
Yeah.
But, like at night, Sarah and I would have all our family over for dinner, and that would be like 30 people, say.
Wow.
And we would invite some of the other friends. Mm-hmm. So we'd have anywhere from 30 to 40 people.
And what kind of meal would you have made for such an occasion?
Usually I would have like a dairy meal, some kind of maybe smoked salmon and bagels and cream cheese and noodle puddings and fruit.
Salads. But it was
and
sort of
sweets.
There was always a few traditional dishes that most people would try to have.
But, you know, years ago when we would have a big a lunch or dinner or whatever, we would have like chicken soup and you know, and roast chicken and brisket and all that good stuff.
Before everybody became real diet conscious, you know, we had chopped liver.
That's right, chopped liver. That was
and two times a year, seems all right.
Yeah.
So now the main dish is like the noodle pudding and the smoked salmon, or lox, it's called lox. And you sort of fill in around those things.
Usually when I have a meal, my family love brisket. Mm. So I have that.
Make that.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the, which holiday is it? And I some years ago I was part of one, kind of by accident, but it's the night when anyone who knocks on your door is supposed to be taken.
Passover.
It's Passover.
You know, when you open the door to the stranger.
Yes.
And you always set a place for the stranger. That's during the Jewish Passover, which is
I thought it was the most beautiful ceremony that I ever.
It was sort of
the whole notion and the way you go around telling the story.
You relate the story of the Exodus from Egypt, and.
We always had big seders.
It's a time for family to get together in the spring of the year. So the Jewish New Year, in the fall of the year, you know, the Jewish New Year, Rosh Hashanah, and then the spring of the year, the Passover, and that's the time when families would come together. It'd be almost like a homecoming.
Right.
And then, of course, our individual families might, the smaller family unit would get together during for Hanukkah, which would be, comes about the time of Christmas, you know, during that time of the year. And there are a couple of minor holidays, but most of the time it was the two main holidays, the Jewish New Year and Yom Kippur, which comes a week later, and then also the Passover in the spring of the year. Because, you know, the Last Supper was the form of the Passover supper, and that's where And that's why there's such a tie-in between Passover and Easter.
Okay. Our family made a big to-do over Passover Seders and our children. We always had a lot of young people at our Seders. And when the kids were off at college, they would bring friends home, Jewish and non-Jewish, and they'd have a lot of singing and laughing and joking.
And now we meet, my family, most of them meet at my son's home in Raleigh for the Passover.
That's our immediate family.
We pass the torch over to them to let them do the preparation. And so
I do that very gracefully.
With much thought, I
mean. And because our immediate family is very close. And in Thanksgiving, my daughter in Greensboro and her husband usually has the family all over. And New Year's Day, my daughter in Chapel Hill has all the family over. And because for Passover, my son in Raleigh has all the family over.
These were holidays that I used to cater.
And because we try to have them all over here too, you know, sometimes not necessarily, but whenever we can get them all over here, you know, we try to have them all together too.
But I'm sure it's nice having Seder somewhere else.
Well, it saves a lot of toll.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. In other words, I was going to say one thing. From all this conversation, you gather that maybe food is a very important part.
It is to me, too. That's why I'm
at it. It's for Baptist homecomings, too. I've been to some.
Exactly. Yeah. But also, it had, you know, for us, it also had a certain, I mean, as I imagine it does for y'all, it isn't just the food. I mean, I enjoy eating. Mm. But there's also kind of an evocation of, there's something about having a table full of dishes that each has a history in its own way. You know, mm-hmm. Great Aunt So-and-so's banana pudding.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even if she's not there, you know, it looks like her daughter has
right.
fixed it.
That's right.
You know, and it's like all of these different connections.
Yeah.
It's very peaceful.
That's right.
To be, not just...
Tradition.
Yeah, kind of like bringing in the ancestors. Mm-hmm.
What else do you want to talk about?
I think we're all set. It sounded was the peak. What I really want to get at is kind of what happened between the time. When would we say that the Jewish community in Weldon was the largest? Would that have been about the time y'all were married, and your children were coming along?
I would think so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think just about the time we were married.
In the 50s and the 60s.
And then we're obviously at a, you know, at a different point.
Really? Much different.
And how did we get from between the two?
Okay, but see,
what happened?
Some of the older generation, or older people, you know, passed on, like my parents and parents of other families, and we became sort of the older generation because we raised our children. And then about in the 70s, our children start going off to college, and when they finished college, they went elsewhere to work. Mm-hmm. And so, there was nothing to draw new people, mm-hmm. new Jewish people especially, into right. the smaller communities.
Well, don't forget, among the older, your parents' generations, each family had four or five, maybe six children. Maybe one child remained in Weldon from that generation. And the others went other places to go to school and to work and never came back to live. So, I mean, it started... So
that's why that's, we became a diminishing...
And, of course, our children...
Did the same thing.
None. I don't think there's... a child that stayed in Weldon who were our contemporaries, you know.
Right. Children.
Children.
Right. Was that hard to watch? I mean, did it matter to y'all?
No,
because I think we were...
That's what we expected. I mean,
knew they wouldn't come back.
First of all, there would be no way to make a living there for them.
Right.
And they couldn't wait to. Now they love to, you know, well, I would say not today, but, you know, the children used to love, once they were settled elsewhere. They'd love to come back to Weldon. And when we moved, they wanted to come back for that last time, you know. They wanted to come back for that last time. And,
you said earlier that for you personally it was hard to leave.
Well, it was a hard...
I know you're happy with being here now, but...
Well, I think we did the right thing. I think we were wise to look into the future. Yeah. That one of these days, one of us is going to be left alone. That it is now, or, you know, that it was, you know, it dwindled down to what we have now, because it started, I guess, in the 70s, getting smaller. And we, you know, every now and then we would have a new Jewish family come into town, but most of them didn't stay very long. Mm-hmm. You know, and they didn't have their roots in the community, and they'd come to temple once in a while, and sometimes they would join and pay some dues. Sometimes they didn't. But we did. We never had, you know, people to move in and stay 10 or 15 years or something like that.
Were there things that the congregation did to try to grow, or I don't know what you could do?
Well, I don't either. The one thing, whenever the hospital would bring in a prospective doctor, and he was Jewish, a Jewish family, they would get in touch with some of us to let them know about the Jewish synagogue and the Jewish life in Weldon, that there were other, there were Jewish people around.
Right.
Right now we have two Jewish doctors from Canada, the husband and wife team.
Yeah.
And right in Weldon?
They live in Ronald Crapus. Well, Weldon and Ronald Crapus are so close together that it's the same difference. Yeah. And they belong to the temple, but they have two small children. And you know, when we have services at night, it's the same time they're putting their children to sleep. And when they bring the children are running around and crying.
I've been there.
So they're still there. They've been there for 2-3 years already. But a nice couple, but like I said, you know, they don't have the roots that we have, and I don't know that they would be ones to carry on the temple 5 years from now, 10 years from now.
Right.
So that, you know, we feel like eventually in the next few years, the temple might cease to exist as a operating.
It's bound to be, because I don't know who's there to look after it.
Who's there now? Your brother's family?
Well, my brother and his wife are there. My brother's 68. He has children that live elsewhere. And he's closed up the business last year, so, you know, he's not tied down to Weldon.
He has separate business.
We were partners together, and then I sold out to him.
Right.
Harry Freed is 81 years old, and his wife is about the same age, I guess, and they have children living elsewhere, and, you know, he wants to stay there as long as he can, but they're not too well, so Morton Farber and his wife are not well at all, and they were never what you might call real active. They supported the temple, but they weren't active in the leadership and carrying on the temple.
They're fairly elderly, or?
They're both 80. I mean, he's 83 years old, I guess. He was a younger brother, this Ellis Farber. And his wife is, you know, approximately my age, I guess. So, you know, and then over in Emporia, Virginia, Eugene Bloom, and Eugene's 81 years old. And he's very active and belonging to the temple. And he's the treasurer, and, you know, he does whatever he can. Mm-hmm. And his wife is probably just a few years younger. He has a son who's a lawyer that is 50 years old. But
they're 18 miles away.
And the younger son, the son, Steve, I don't think, you know, he's going to be active on a day-to-day or week-to-week basis. You know, he pays dues and he comes once in a while. But, you know, his father is the one who sort of feels very close to the temple. So one of these days, you know, the temple will cease to function, and what's to happen to it. I keep telling them, and did before even I left there, that we need to draw up a will. so that those of us who love the temple and have been the ones to support it and carry it on should decide what's to happen to the assets of the temple in the future. Doesn't mean they have to close it down now.
Right.
But when the time comes, it should. There might be only one or two people left there who are going to have to handle it, and we should have a will stating where the funds should go, where the artifacts should go, what should be done with the property.
Well, what kinds of things would you consider besides like the funds? What kind of artifacts would you be?
Well, we have a lot of ceremonial
objects
like the scrolls, the Torahs.
Where did the Torahs come from?
Well, they were bought probably in New York.
When, in your day or in your father's?
In my father's day, I remember when they bought them. Mm-hmm. But, in fact, one came through an uncle of mine, and the other one, I think Jake Spires gave it, and I don't know who ordered it, but it came from New York.
And
we have the property, we have a building, and we have beautiful stained glass windows. We have the memorial plaques, I don't know if you're familiar, but they're memorial plaques for all the people who have been memorialized, not necessarily those who lived in Weldon on the Rapids or were members of the temple, but families, you know, maybe in, there's one for Sarah's father, and the ones for Sarah's mother, and for my parents, and, you know,
name and
the dates, and a light that's burned on the anniversary of their death.
A candle?
No, it's electric light, electric. Bulb, and it's turned on. Because on the anniversary of a loved one's death, we say a memorial prayer on the yearly anniversary.
Just reiterating our belief in God had nothing to do with the deceased.
But you do. But.
Yeah,